The J-Talk Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. Ben Maxwell and Sam Robson with you. And Sam, in the interests of fairness, I guess I should ask you which of the three goals Manchester United scored against the Spurs was your favourite over the weekend, or perhaps one of the two Brighton scored against Liverpool took your fancy?
Oh, I quite like the two Brighton ones, to be honest. But yeah, Cristiano Ronaldo, terrific goal. So United are back up and running. Ollie's back at the wheel. So it's all fine again.
yeah. Well, that suits me fine. But yeah, and it serves me right for being cocky on last week's episode. That's the last time I ever do that when Liverpool have a positive result. You can rest assured. And yeah, if you think I'm crazy, listeners, for thinking that my cheekiness on last week's episode contributed to Liverpool dropping points against Brighton, then you just don't understand the jinx. I am guilty as charged, and yeah, that's the last of that. So anyways, leaving all of that aside, it's a very cup-heavy episode this week. It should be shorter than usual, but never underestimate Sam and my efforts in rounding up five games. It should take about 15 to 20 minutes, but yeah, goodness knows how long we'll be here. The Emperor's Cup quarterfinals were played last Wednesday night, and then on Saturday, Nagoya won the Levain Cup for the first time in their history with a 2-0 win over Cerezo Osaka. And we'll start in the glorious sunshine at Saitama Stadium on Saturday afternoon. And Sam, after a fairly uneventful first half, Naoki Maeda's header 2 minutes after the break sent Grampus on their way to a ultimately fairly comfortable victory.
Yeah, it did. And I just want to say, first of all, congratulations on the commentary that you managed to keep me awake at 5 o'clock in the morning, which isn't an easy task. So that was great. Yeah, how was the experience, first of all, and yeah, to commentate on that sort of final?
Yeah, it was really enjoyable. I mean, to be honest, yeah, I was quite surprised to see the negative comments about the first half when I popped on to social media at halftime, both the Twitter and in the pods line group. But yeah, I mean, I guess I'd just gotten caught up in the occasion. I didn't really have time to think that it wasn't the best of footballing spectacles. But yeah, I mean, just being able to you know, to contribute to the enjoyment of the game for so many people around the world watching on YouTube was absolutely terrific. And yeah, the third time I've done it in the space of a month, and felt the most comfortable this time around. I guess it's just a shame it'll probably be about a year until I do it again, if the J-League indeed do ask me. But yeah, all in all, a great experience. And thankfully, I don't think I made too many mistakes on the players' names. I know I got Kato and Inui mixed up on one shot attempt. But apart from that, I think it was okay, considering the glare on the screen with, as I said, the glorious sunshine. It was quite hard to make the Cerezo players out in their all-white kits. But all in all, yeah, a great experience.
Yeah, well, it sounded good to me. And I saw the picture that you sent me. They didn't actually give you the time of the game, so that was always handy. So you're running towards the end of the game, not having a clue how much is left. But I thought you did a fantastic job. And if anyone at the JFA is listening, everyone outside of Japan would quite like Ben on some Emperor's Cup action on YouTube. So if you could get that done, that'd be, very good. Thank you.
Yeah, no complaints here. Yeah, I wouldn't mind backing up again for some Emperor's Cup after the J1 season has finished. So, well, yeah, I mean, were the people right, Sam? Was the first half not all that much to write home about?
Well, I don't think it was a great game for a neutral. I thought it was quite interesting the way that both teams had set up, and especially after the result in midweek, which we'll get onto later. But yeah, Nagoya were fairly defensive for most of the game, probably 80% of it. But they defended really well. I mean, I think you mentioned so many times during commentary of Kakitani mopping up in front of the back line. And it was just kind of that sort of performance from Nagoya, where everyone did their defensive duties and they didn't really let Cerezo in with a sniff. And as soon as they took the lead at the start of that second half, then they were fairly comfortable, even though they had no real out ball and were just kind of having Cerezo camped in their half for most of the game.
Well, yeah, I guess in retrospect, it was fairly empty calorie possession from Cerezo, wasn't it? I mean, yeah, as the first half went on, I mean, the possession stat kept steadily rising higher and higher. I mean, after the drinks break, you know, again, I think I said several times that Cerezo had slightly shaded the game, but that was simply just having more of the ball, but not really being able to do too much with it. And, yeah, after that very early goal in the second half from Maeda, I guess the game basically went perfectly to script for Massimo Ficcadenti, didn't it? Because, you know, Mitch Langerak was, I don't think he was really tested at all for the entire game, was he? And, you know, Ficcadenti, his players, and obviously all of the Nagoya supporters could properly savour the moment in the latter stages after Risho Inagaki had smashed in the sealer in the 79th minute. Yet another vital goal for Inagaki this season.
Well, I'm delighted it was Inagaki that proved to be the match winner. He'd been, for me, far and away Nagoya's best player this season, a talisman, both defensively and in attack, with the goals that he scored. And, yeah, it was a lot of fortune, I suppose, in the way that the ball fell to him eventually when Saito ran through, tackled, and so many ricochets went to Sverchok, and then the ball falls to Inagaki. But they took their chances, and Nagoya actually created some. Like, Cerezo were limited. I think there were some long-range efforts from Matsuda, the one that flicked the post from about 30 yards, and then the other strike, which Okubo just couldn't turn in. Mm. But otherwise, yeah, they had a lot of the ball, loads of the ball, but didn't do much with it. I thought Nagoya were, the way that they set up, especially when they took off Maeda at maybe about 50 minutes. They didn't have an out ball until Sverchok came on. So it was just Nagoya, whenever they got the ball, they just cleared it and Cerezo could then attack. But they were just lacking any sort of clever movement, clever balls in. They took Kato off and replaced him with Okubo, which at 39, he's not really the guy who's going to get away from a defender. And I just thought they just didn't seem to have the players on the pitch to kind of break down this absolute wall from Nagoya. And Nagoya played that really well. It wasn't exciting. It's not the way that a neutral would want the final necessarily to go, but Nagoya won't care because their name's on the trophy.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't think Ficcadenti could have asked for it to go much better, really. You know, his vaunted defence, who obviously, as we'll come on to, as you mentioned it yourself, were breached three times last Wednesday night. But yes, they've bounced back. And it's quite amazing, isn't it, really? I mean, they're obviously an original J-League club, and this was the first time they'd ever made the final after losing in the semi-finals on eight separate occasions. So, yeah, to make it and then, put on something resembling a performance, and obviously following the manager's instructions to the letter, has seen them raise the trophy, and joyous scenes at full time. And, well, yeah, I mean, this is obviously a great triumph for, finally, in Japan for Ficcadenti. He'd done well in his brief spell at FC Tokyo, and then obviously moved down to Tosu. After he took over at Nagoya, he's basically broken down everything that Yahiro Kazuma had built there, and he's rebuilt the club from the bottom up in his own footballing philosophy. So, for him, I guess it's something of a triumph, isn't it? And as an FC Tokyo supporter, he used to manage my club. I'm very happy for him that he's finally got his hands on a trophy in this country.
Yeah, it's terrific for him. I mean, when he took over at Nagoya, they were on the brink of relegation. They'd kind of become a bit of a yo-yo team, which is not really expected for Nagoya. But yeah, he's got them to consistently challenge for the Champions League, now to win trophies and compete at the late ends of tournaments. I think, yeah, he's done a terrific job. He's got his detractors, of course, because of the style of football. It's not necessarily the most exciting, but it's incredibly effective. I mean, the records that their defence is putting up for the last couple of seasons, it's just, yeah, he's done a fantastic job, and he really does deserve this trophy. So I'm very happy for him, and I'm sure he'll be delighted that his methods have proven worthwhile.
Indeed. So on the day then, I guess the goal scorers take the headlines. They were interviewed on the pitch straight after the game, as you can understand, Maeda and Inagaki. I guess for a showpiece occasion, you know, again, looking back in retrospect, as we both said, it didn't really deliver, didn't it? A player like Mateus, who is, you know, usually central to everything good that Nagoya does going forward, basically I can't remember a time in the game where he had, you know, time on the ball to set himself to look up and try and either pick out a pass for a teammate or even think about shooting. So it was one of those games where, again, Nagoya, yeah, things went to, as Fikadenti probably would have drawn them up. But as you said yourself, yeah, for a neutral, it just wasn't the ultimately the best kind of spectacle you would have hoped for.
No, it wasn't. I mean, yeah, Nagoya's main attacking players were reduced to defensive efforts. I mean, Mateus played a lot of the game at right back, and he did incredibly well back there. He worked very hard, and that can be said for everyone in that Nagoya team. It was a tough one for anyone to pick a man of the match. I think Inagaki, I think Dan Olowitz mentioned this, is he was one of the people picking it. He got lucky because he scored just before they had to put the nominations. Yeah. So, otherwise, you could have picked anyone because they all worked really hard. It was a collective effort. And, yeah, I mean, Kakitani has had his detractors, mainly me, for most of the game. And he didn't really do anything going forward. But the work he did defensively, I mean, that you can see maybe that's the reason why Fikadenti wants him. He absolutely did all the hard yards. And, yeah, they were terrific. But you've got to question Cerezo with the players that they have in that team. When you bring Kiyotake on at half time, you've got Inui and Sakamoto, you probably expect a bit more from them to be able to pick out a defence, and they didn't manage to do that in the way that Kobe did a week or so ago, where they were faced with a Nagoya team sitting in, but they had the quality to break through and cause a few issues, but this Cerezo team just maybe froze on the big occasion.
Yes, indeed. All right, then. So, yeah, a first Levain Cup for Nagoya, as I said, in their first ever appearance in the final. And it was, Sam, a remarkable turnaround from last Wednesday night in the Emperor's Cup quarterfinals, when a much-changed Cerezo team turned up at the Toyota Stadium and turned over a pretty much full-strength Grampa side 3-0 in the Cup final preview. So from Wednesday night to Saturday, obviously couldn't have been much more of a turnaround, a five-goal swing, in the most basic terms. So what went wrong for Nagoya last Wednesday night that obviously they were able to turn around against, again, a full-strength Cerezo team where they were beaten by their second stringers last midweek?
Yeah, it was a weird game last Wednesday because probably for the first half an hour, not a great deal happened, but Nagoya were the team in control. They had most of the possession, but then they fell foul to being unable to mark from set pieces again. It was an issue against Kobe, an issue against Pohang. It was an issue again here. Corner, I think it was from the left-hand side, Langerak comes and misses it, and Toriumi is completely unmarked and scores. And Nagoya are never that good when they have to come from behind, because they like to sit and like to defend a lead. And another corner immediately afterwards, pretty much, and Thiago scored, again very loosely marked, and they found themselves 2-0 down and didn't really have the firepower necessary to get back into that game, because Cerezo defensively, even with his rotated team, they bring in Thiago Pagnussat, who I think is a terrific defender, but has found himself on the fringes since Kojiku has come in, but he's a terrific defender. They held out pretty well. Cerezo grabbed the third on the counter-attack, and Nagoya just seemed without answers, and maybe at 2-0 they just turned their attentions to Saturday, because there was limited effort, I thought, from Nagoya to get back into the game.
Right, and it was interesting, wasn't it? Because it was Adam Taggart who scored the third goal, the sealer, if one was even needed, just past the hour. And that means that Cerezo will play Urawa in the Empress Cup semi-finals, who, of course, they just beat over two legs last month in the Levain Cup semi-finals. Now, interestingly, we said it was a much-changed team on Wednesday night for Cerezo, and that none of their three scorers from Wednesday night even made the match day squad on Saturday. Seko and Nishio are the first choice centre-backs, so it was probably always going to be a given that Toriumi and Thiago would miss out, and whether they would miss out on the squad entirely, we obviously weren't sure. But did Kogiku overthink things here? I mean, Taggart might have been a useful weapon to have on the bench on Saturday. I know he brought a raft of attackers off the bench. Would Taggart have offered something different from the likes of a Toyokawa, do you think, or even Okubo?
Yeah, I definitely think so. The thing is, Taggart came off injured with about 15 minutes to go, 20 minutes to go in that Empress Cup game.
Oh, right,
and
okay.
He was training afterwards, so I thought he was probably going to be fit enough for the bench, but obviously he didn't make it, so they didn't take the risk on him there. But absolutely, if you have a player of that quality, and you saw with the goal that he scored in the Emperor's Cup, he'd have been almost perfect to bring on, because he offers that aerial threat if you want to go wide and whip crosses in, or you can play it into his feet. He's got, yeah, a good range of movement there. So they did really miss Taggart, because Okubo and Toyokawa didn't offer too much. And I mean, Thiago, he started for most of the season, was one of the rare good things about the Kulpi team, but yeah, he's dropped out. I quite like the partnership of Seco and Nishio, but I would still have Thiago on the bench. Aerially, he is a massive threat from set pieces, and if he needed a goal, I wouldn't be against putting him on and trying to shove him up front or something, or at least being a threat from set pieces. So that was a strange decision, but it's one he's been making for the rest for the previous month, so it wasn't a major surprise.
Mm. Yeah, fair enough then. All right, so we've mentioned Urawa. They were also quite comfortable in their quarterfinal in what turned out to be the theme of the night, as all four quarterfinals were won by at least 2-goal margins. Reds headed to the Suita Stadium to face Gamba Osaka. Kasper Juncker got them going with the opener in just the 10th minute, and Takahiro Sekine doubled their advantage 3 minutes before half time. So was it as comfortable as the scoreline ultimately suggested, Sam, or did Gamba threaten to really get back in it and give Reds a run for their money here?
I thought it was generally pretty comfortable. Gamba did have the occasional chance, but Nishikawa was rarely really tested too greatly, and Urawa always looked more likely to score. I think Gamba were playing with a back three that consisted, well, back four of Yanagisawa, Kurokawa, Suganuma and Sato, with all the three main, well, the four main, or five even, sorry, defenders not playing through various injuries or whatnot. So they weren't great. They were very static. That first goal was just a hopeful hook forward from Hirano. The defence just stood still and watched Juncker run through and score. And they were pretty static as well for the second goal from Sekine, which was nodded down by Osaka. So, yeah, not great from Gamba. Urawa took their chances and, yeah, very worthy winners, in my opinion.
All right, so it'll be Cerezo Osaka versus Urawa in one semi-final on December 12th. On the other side of the draw, J1 champions-elect Kawasaki will face Oita after Frontale cruised past Kashima 3-1, and Oita ended J2 Iwata's run with a 2-0 away win at the Ekopa World Cup Stadium. So Kawasaki took the lead through a Koki Machida own goal just past the half hour. Then two goals in the first 6 minutes of the second half from Reo Hatate and Yasuto Wakizaka pretty much wrapped things up at Todoroki, though Ryotaro Araki did get a consolation for Antlers in the 90th minute. Sam, Frontale could be crowned J1 champions as early as this Wednesday afternoon, and on this evidence, they'll certainly take some topping as they go looking for a second straight league and cup double.
Yeah, this was a very comfortable victory. It took them maybe a little while to get into the game, but once they did, I mean, I don't know how many times we've said on this podcast in the last few years that a quick blitz at the start of the second half saw off a team, and this was the case again as they went 3-0. Wakizaka's goal is terrific, and Kashima really didn't trouble them too much for the rest of the game, and yeah, Kawasaki just march on. I mean, yeah, it's very difficult to see past them in this competition, the Emperor's Cup, and then on Wednesday you'd expect them, even though it's a tough game against Red, you'd still be fancying Kawasaki to get past them. And just for Kashima, this was typical inconsistent Kashima, because they'd won the previous game, they were always going to lose this one.
Yes, indeed. Well, Oita will be next cab off the rank in trying to deny Kawasaki a back-to-back Emperor's Cups. They ultimately wore down Iwata thanks to goals from Sam's favourite Shun Nagasawa 20 minutes into the second half, and Kazuki Fujimoto, who wrapped things up in the first minute of second half stoppage time. So, Sam, we know that Oita are dialed into the relegation dogfight, but well, they can Park, any thoughts of a cup set in the semis, as they will be played, obviously, the weekend after the season finishes? While Iwata, of course, are the J2 leaders and looking near certainties to be promoted. So fair play, I guess, to Oita for making it through. What did you make of this game and of Iwata? I know it was a much-changed team for them, though, ahead of their expected J1 return.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't a great game, and I'm not sure how much I can take out of the Jubilo performance, because I think Lukian was the only one who played in the previous game, and yeah, their striker, he looked their most dangerous player, but he was suspended for the following league game, so that's why he got a run out. But otherwise, it was a completely changed squad. They were in the game for about 60 minutes. It was pretty even, maybe Jubilo even slightly the better team, which isn't great news for Oita, who went with pretty much just their full strength squad. Even Nomura came in to start this game, so they would have expected a little bit of an easier tie, but maybe they ground Jubilo down a little bit. Nagasawa scored from a header, which was, yeah, that's what he does. And then I missed the goal, the second goal, live, and I think it was Neil Debnam mentioned to me that I have to see it, because Nagasawa was incredible in the goal. And then he picks it up and he plays it outside of the boot about 30 yards through to Fujimoto. It's hands down the best thing I've ever seen him do. And Fujimoto scored, and so that, yeah, they just about deserve the win in the end. But it's not a result or a performance from Oita that I think shouts that they're going to stay up this season, and it's not one I can take too much away from Jubilo for losing, because they put out a second string team and it worked out for them, because they went and beat Omiya at the weekend.
Yep, fair enough then. All right, so they are the four Emperor's Cup quarterfinals from last Wednesday wrapped up then. So, yes, once again, the semifinals will take place the weekend after the J1 season concludes. Cerezo Osaka versus Urawa and Kawasaki versus Oita. So, yeah, we'll obviously be around to cover those both before and after they happen. Yeah, that's basically all of our cup action from the past week or so rounded up. So this coming Wednesday is a national holiday in Japan. It's a culture day, and I'm sure Sam is looking forward to getting up at the, well, before the crack of dawn, probably in the UK, Sam, with the games kicking off at 1:05 p.m. And, well, yeah, you won't be able to sleep in at all, will you, Sam? Because the top two are in action at the earliest possible time. Kawasaki host Urawa and Yokohama F. Marinos are also at home against Gamba Osaka. And we know that Kawasaki's magic number is four. So if they were to beat Reds and Yokohama F. Marinos failed to beat Gamba, that would see the title clinched by about 3 p.m. on the Wednesday. So, yeah, unfortunately, I don't even know whether it's worth your time going to bed, Sam. You'll be up that early in the morning.
Yeah, I'm not looking forward to it necessarily. Clocks have gone back as well, so they're 4:05 a.m. kickoff, so I have to be up a bit before that as well. So yeah, at least they're interesting games, and there's something on the line with them. It's not two mid-table teams or anything. So yeah, if anyone's going to wake me up, Frontale and Marinos are the teams to do it, so that's fine. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I'm sticking my neck out on the line. I don't think that the title will be decided on Wednesday. I do think Marinos will have enough to beat Gamba and keep it alive, but they're two difficult games, obviously. Reds still going for the ACL, so they would be up for that. They'd love a victory over Frontale. So, yeah, they're two difficult games. I expect two home victories, but, yeah, who knows? Maybe we will be crowning champions on Wednesday afternoon.
Yes, indeed. All right, so right down the other end of the table, where obviously we've been focusing a lot of our attention in recent episodes with the relegation dogfight holding far more intrigue than what is basically now a non-existent title race. Two of the basically the six teams that are still in trouble are at home on Wednesday. Yokohama FC host Tosu and Tokushima Vortis entertain Cerezo Osaka, who, yeah, will probably be still licking their wounds after Saturday's defeat, while all of the other four, Shimizu, Shonan, Oita and Sendai are all away from home. So I guess the only thing that they can really hang their hat on, Sam, is that the majority of their opponents, especially on Wednesday and even over the weekend as well, a lot of them have literally nothing to play for. So with their seasons, their very J1 futures on the line, a team like Shonan who have to travel up to Sapporo on Saturday afternoon, well, we know Sapporo are always capable of entertaining us, but yeah, they really have nothing to play for. So this could be, you know, the perfect away day for Belmare, perhaps.
Yeah, I think so, because Sapporo, even at their best, give you a chance at the back. So Shonan will fancy their chances of scoring against them. And if they take the lead, are Sapporo going to be that bothered about getting back into it? There's not like they've got masses to play for. So, yeah, I think it's a decent fixture for Shonan. I think it's a decent fixture for Oita. It's a derby of a description. I mean, I don't think it's the fiercest thing in the world. But, Avispera again, they've been rotating their team quite a bit in the last few games, so maybe it'd be a slightly weaker side that Oita have to face in that game. And then Shimizu against Tokyo, who've got, again, nothing to play for, and Tokyo don't necessarily set the world alight most weeks, so Shimizu will fancy their chances. You've got to fear for Vigalta Sendai, though, away at Kobe. They've definitely drawn the midweek short straw.
Yes, Sendai, whatever I called them before. Yes, it doesn't look a very promising prospect for them, but you never know. Of course, they're coming in on the back of an important victory, so you never do know, especially in the J-League, of course. And then on the weekend, match day 35 will be played. We've got three games on the Saturday. So if Sam is right and Kawasaki and Yokohama F. Marinos win on Wednesday, then, the title could be Kawasaki's in the unlikely event that FC Tokyo take anything off for Yokohama F. Marinos in their game at 4 o'clock. Kawasaki have to wait until they play one of the seven games on Sunday. They're away at Tosu at 2 o'clock. And again, in the dogfight, Tokushima are away at Kobe, and Sendai have to play another top three challenger when they host Nagoya. So it's going to potentially a rough looking week for Sendai. But again, the other four teams in the dogfight all play teams with nothing to play for over the weekend. And obviously we'll be back to round up all of that action in next week's episode. I guess if the title is sealed on Wednesday, we might have to scratch together some sort of emergency podcast, perhaps with a drunken Neil Debnam making a cameo appearance, which would be a treat for everyone, I'm sure. But, we'll cross that bridge if and when we come to it. So that's basically it on our agenda for this week. So we have managed to keep it short and sweet, Sam. But we did want to let the listeners know that from our next episode, we will be starting up our Players of the Season series again. It was such a smash hit last season that we obviously couldn't let this opportunity pass without doing it again. And we've decided to flip the script a little bit. And, we've just talked a little bit about some of the teams in mid-table that have nothing to play for in the remainder of the season. So basically, we're starting with them. I guess we can kind of peg an arbitrary point about 3 or 4 weeks ago when they've all basically, laid down and they're just waiting to get on the beach. So the teams from 8th Fukuoka down to 12th Cerezo Osaka will be our first targets for Players of the Season next week. And I don't know. Well, yeah, we're obviously going to put our heads together and come up with a short list. If you are a patron of the JTalk podcast, then stand by. There will be some polls heading your way. We would like your input on who you think are the players of the season for these particular clubs. But, looking forward to beginning to kind of wrap the season up, Sam.
Yeah, it's that time of year again. It's gone quickly, hasn't it? I mean, it was all good fun last year. We denied this Iniesta and a different thing on his trophy case, and we gave it to Furuhashi, and that worked out well. So I think they went well last week, and hopefully these players that have got nothing to play for can see this poll and think we've got to really try on Wednesday to get some vote from our patrons.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. All right. So, yeah, we might be getting some help from some of our patrons who support these particular clubs. So, yeah, next week we'll be doling out the hardware for Avispa Fukuoka, FC Tokyo, Sanfrecce Hiroshima, Consadole Sapporo, and Cerezo Osaka. So, yeah, looking forward to getting our shortlist together and then getting the thoughts of our patrons as well. So, all right, Sam, we have managed to do it. Short but sweet. Coming in right around the 30-minute mark. So, yeah, terrific stuff. An interesting week or so of cup action in Japan. And, well, yeah, we're both obviously looking forward to the league fixtures returning, although you're obviously not that excited about getting up super super early. But, yeah, looking forward to rounding it up with you on next week's episode.
Yeah, I look forward to it, and then more for the patrons. I will be doing a roundup of these games as long as I'm fairly awake to write it on Wednesday. So, yeah, I'll wrap up all 10 fixtures. Hopefully, it'll be out normal time. I'm not going to rush it as much as I usually do.
Well, yes, with them all happening at a reasonable hour, at least for us in Japan, then yes, you can pace yourself a little bit on Wednesday, yeah, very early in the morning your time. So we will leave it there. That is it for this week's episode of the J-Talk podcast. Sam and I would like to thank our patrons for their ongoing support on Patreon. If you'd like to get involved, please visit patreon.com/jtalkpod. And of course, listeners, we'd like to thank you for listening wherever you are. We'll be back next week to round up the J1 action and start handing out our Player of the Season awards. Speak to you next week. Bye for now.
The J-Talk podcast. Yes, 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 yes.